Well, our
stay and play at Graton Resort and Casino, your destination all in. Experience incredible gaming action, great dining, and a new luxury hotel. Book your stay today at GratonResortCasino.com.
It is the official start of the barbecue season, Memorial Day weekend, remembering our fallen soldiers that have participated and contributed to us being able to barbecue and have fun on Memorial Day weekend. But let's not forget the real intent of the holiday. Having said that, we want to say good morning to Chef John Ash in the KSRO kitchen.
How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. I hope your grill is cleaned and ready for the start of the barbecue
season. It's pretty clean. It's pretty clean. So you know how to quickly clean a grill, don't you? Especially if you have a gas one. It's to turn it all the way up, put the hood down, and just let it burn all that stuff off so you don't have to sit there and scrub it.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
How come you didn't tell me this 30 years ago?
Oh, it's the simple way of doing it because we all forget. And, you know, the last time we grilled was last October or something like that. And now it's all crusted and rusty. And
well, now you tell us what you have on your backyard for grilling purposes.
I have too many appliances. I have a green egg that I use. That's the one I use mostly. I have a portable wood-fired oven back there that I occasionally use. I don't use it quite as much because in my old age, it's too much trouble to clean it out.
In your dotage?
Yeah, right, which is so. And then a third one, which I got from Texas a long time ago, which was, again, a charcoal grill, but one that you can adjust the height.
Oh, right. So you have three different sources. Well, today is a momentous occasion because our favorite butcher is joining us in the KSRO kitchen today, and that's Ryan Wren. Good morning, Ryan.
Good morning. How are you?
We're doing great, and this is our third annual. We've had you on more than three times, but we made it a point to try to have you on the anniversary of the Sonoma Meat Company since you flung open your doors. So was it three years ago?
3 years ago, yes.
And today is the big anniversary?
Today's the anniversary. We have a roasted pig in the parking lot, and we have Bodavara sausage that we serve with aioli, and then it's a beautiful day for barbecuing, as they say.
The Sonoma Meat Company is located on Sebastopol Avenue in Santa Rosa, right in Roseland. Mm-hmm. Instead of going, if you get off the freeway, if you're going down west, instead you take it left, east.
Head toward the freeway.
Basically. Yeah. You'll see all the activity and happy people.
Yes.
And for libations, what are you serving?
Hen House Brewing Company will be there, serving up, I believe, an IPA and another, I think a Saison. I'm not exactly sure. But all of the proceeds for the beer will go to the West End Farmers Market. I think it's the WIC program or I don't know what program it is, but basically helping the community get.
Yeah, it's EBT.
Mm-hmm. EBT, there you go.
Is that the one you're thinking?
Yeah,
EBT. To allow people that don't have the income to purchase good, healthy food.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So with every beer, you're helping someone mm-hmm. go through it. What about the sausage and stuff? How much is that?
So we had $2 for a Bodavara sausage, which is a Catalan type of sausage, really mild, and we serve it with a garlic aioli. And on a kind of a brioche style of bun. It's delicious. We do it every year. Unfortunately, I was unable to bring some for my friends here, but it's cooking now.
That's so. Okay. We'll go buy some.
Yes, perfect. Perfect. Come on down.
So that, I love that sausage.
Yeah.
It's a traditional one.
Yes, very, very traditional. Right. It speaks to a time when I was living in Barcelona and had no money, but I could barely just afford a sausage, and that's what I lived on, basically, was sausage and a little bit of beans.
I didn't know the backstory to that, of why that sausage has become your signature sausage.
Yeah. I really like it, yeah. It has a special place in my heart.
So how many, I think I know, but how many sausages do you make?
We have 43 types of sausage that we make now.
And at any one time, how many will you have in the store?
So we'll have usually 7 fresh in the case, and then of the 40, there's probably 30 in the freezer. So if it's not in the case and it's something that you've had before, just ask and we'll have it frozen for you.
So what's the most unusual sausage, do you think, that you make?
The most unusual sausage. Well, it's kind of too unusual. There's the bacon apple cheddar, which is kind of like a sweet cheddar, almost apple pie kind of a sausage, which is sort of a funky, creation. And then we have blood sausage, some great smoked Hungarian sausage that I really am interested in these days. It's got a little bit ferment, so it's smoked and fermented that I really enjoy. As far as out there sausage. We have a we have a limoncino, which has whole lemons ground up, which is really, really nice. Yeah, that's a kind of a different combination.
So, you know, another one that I like that you make is the merguez, which is spicy and wonderful. And
Yeah, the merguez is a fantastic North African. Really enjoy it. Yeah. French.
First time I really had that was when we were in Paris in the the section, in the merguez section.
Yeah, yeah.
And we liked it so much, we went back three other times for French fries and merguez sausage.
Yeah, yeah.
It was delicious.
And it's interesting. You never see it here.
Yeah, I don't know why.
Yeah.
I love it. It's so good and greasy with the lamb.
No, it is.
I want to put it on bread. Oh, it's it makes me hungry.
Isn't there a better word than greasy?
You can
unctuous.
Unctuous. Yes.
Unctuous is the word to use.
Yes.
So every time when we do this show, Ryan, it's amazing how many people come up to it. I'm sure John too, but me, and say, "Go, I never heard of this place." Mm-hmm. You're telling me it's been around for 3 years.
Yes.
Give us the 90 seconds historical perspective of how you got started and where you were before you started.
So I was a cook previously. I worked at many different restaurants all over the world, and every place that I would work, I wound up kind of gravitating towards the meat aspect. And so at about 10 years, we'll just say a while ago, it's looking more like 15, about 15 years ago, I went for it. I started working at a meat cutting facility at Willowside Meats here in Santa Rosa, and really learned my trade there. And then from there, I helped another place open their custom fabrication for USDA. And I really saw a need for it for the community. People were raising a lot of their own livestock and not really having a place to have it cut in a way that the community could get to it, as well as all the fun products that we love to make at Sonoma County Meat Company. So my wife and I decided to jump off the cliff and open a custom cut and wrap USDA inspected plant in Santa Rosa.
And this was unusual.
Yes.
There had not been anything like this.
So for someone who was raising their own animals before you came on the scene, what would they have to do?
Well, they had to ship it very, very far. I think you could have some stuff done near Sacramento and some places near San Luis Obispo, if I'm not mistaken. So it was a lot of time in the car, and there weren't a lot of good options. I feel like a lot of the places that were doing it were so far removed and kind of didn't want to take the care to make each, you know, person able to really, you know, sell their product in a way that was amazing.
So is that still an important part of your business?
It is an important part of our business. So we still do that. And we, as well as making our own products, and both of them have worked out really well.
You also deal with some really great growers,
yes,
don't you? You brought some literature that's here, but you know, these are all small, small operations.
Yeah, I mean, really great people. We deal with Oak Ridge Angus, which is between on 128 between Calistoga and Healdsburg, as the crow flies, and they're amazing. The best grass-fed beef, finished with a little bit of barley, non-GMO barley from Racer 5, so it's it's more sustainable than purchasing a finishing from a feed store or whatnot, and the beef is over the top. Mm. It's the best. I've cut a lot of beef in this county for many, many people, many purveyors, small, large, and it's hands down. You know, just try it, you'll know. It's
That's
amazing.
A huge statement, because there's still a lot of resistance to grass-fed products.
Yeah, this is the best. I mean, that's it. I can't say it enough times.
So no corn, none of those other fatteners.
No, a little bit of barley, and that's it.
Wow.
At the end.
And I'm reading that they use Bear Republic Microbrewery in Cloverdale, California, the spent brewer's grain.
Yep, that's what they use.
So that's really a local beef.
Uh-huh. It's fantastic. You know, Frank is a wonderful person, Cheryl as well. They're great to deal with. I can't say enough wonderful things about them.
So do you have a lot of their cuts in the case?
Yes, we do. That's the only beef that we carry and sell.
Oh. So they produce enough to keep you supplied?
It's always a balance. I'm constantly talking to Frank. Okay, we're going to get three this week. Are we going to get two? And he's been really, really great. Really great.
And what about lamb? Who's your lamb producer?
Williams Ranch, which is Carrie and Rex. They're awesome. The lamb it was a little bit of an interesting start because it takes a little bit to get hold, but once people taste it, they're like,
and we've had Rex on the show a number
Rex
of times
great.
Over the years.
So how would you describe their lamb, flavor-wise?
So it has that great grass flavor without the lamb finish. Mm-hmm. So you have all of the kind of dynamics of the you know, terroir, dirt, or whatever you want to call it. And the grass has a nice kind of like gentle, smooth flavor, but there's not that greasy finish that tends to be, it comes from the oxidation of the fat that tends to make people get turned off.
It's so interesting to me, the number of people who don't like lamb or think they don't like lamb until they've had good lamb.
Yeah.
You know, and is it because a lot of the conventional lamb that we buy in the market is kind of muttony, or is that the reason?
I think that it's how it's fed. I mean, we're pretty lucky to be on the West Coast, and in the coastal area has a lot to do with it. I think that there is an age thing that sometimes gets mixed in, but you know, and mostly with most animals, it's how, you know, what you feed them is the most important thing, I think.
Are you selling more lamb or not?
Yes, we are. You know, I'm sure Carrie's listening somewhere, you know, going, oh, Ryan. But we're selling so much of that lamb. It is amazing and delicious.
So one of because of your chefing background and all that stuff, one of the things that's really fun when you go into the store is to be able to talk to the staff about how to cook the stuff. So how do you cook sausages so that you don't end up with burned skin and raw insides and all of that stuff?
Well, there's two ways. If you're going to grill it, I prefer a slightly indirect heat. And to take your time, it's really important to make sure that the skin or the outside remains whole. So you don't want to put too much heat on there, otherwise it will break apart and become too crispy. Mm-hmm. And then when the outside shrinks, it will pull itself apart. So indirect heat, depending on the size, if it's a 22-20s, which are your standard sausage, 4-to-1, 4 links to a pound, then you could do 2 to 3 minutes on each side. Let it rest a little bit. You want it to be, when you take it off the grill, you want it to be just cooked. Just, not over, not cut through. Oh, it's definitely cooked in the middle. Let it set for a second. The proteins will relax a little bit, and then cut it, and it will be delicious.
And don't poke it.
Right. No, I prefer if you don't. Yeah. I mean, if you want to check if it's done, of course, you can cut a little piece in, normal. But if you do it in a pan, if you don't have access to a grill, then just a little bit of oil, a peanut oil or a safflower oil or something that's high flash point, medium heat, and don't be cheap with the oil. You know, put a good amount in there. Same thing, medium heat, brown on one side, not too dark, light brown. You can always flip it back and forth till you get that maybe 4 minutes on each side. Pull it off, let it sit. If you cut it right away, the issue is that all the juices will run out. You want to think of it as like a meat, you know, the original tagomi. It's a meat pack. And so if you wait, let the proteins relax after being heated, cut it. Beautiful. And enjoy.
And do you say you also have lamb sausages too?
We do. We have lamb merguez, which is our favorite. And then we have a lamb Italian sometimes. It changes quite frequently. Sometimes we even make a lamb bonafire if we feel like.
Ever do duck sausages?
No, we do not do duck sausages. We sell duck breasts, and we sell whole duck, all from Liberty Farms, but we don't usually make sausage out of it.
And you sell duck fat in the case, too,
and duck fat, yes. Mm. Rendered duck fat.
Good for fries and potatoes, aren't they?
Anything.
Yeah.
Sunblock.
You know, if you don't want to use sunblock, just use the duck fat. It's good.
What popular cuts of lamb would you suggest that are maybe a little more economical that are overlooked?
Shoulder chops are my favorite. Mm. Hands down, I love them.
I thought they were pretty fatty.
No, they're not too bad. There is a little bit of fat in between the blade and you'd call it the chuck eye of the shoulder. But if you grill it, they're usually about 3/4 inch thick. And I think that the value is there, 100%. Amazing. You get all the different muscle groups or a lot of them in there, and it's fantastic. Mm.
So shoulder chops.
Shoulder chops. You can do leg steaks if you want, but it's a bit more homogeneous for grilling, this is.
Yeah.
And I prefer the shoulder chops.
So before we came on the air, we were talking in the green room, I think it's green, whatever room it was, about this, which is still mysterious to people, Wagyu beef. What in the world is Wagyu beef?
So,
and let me preface this by saying I visited Ryan yesterday, and I have never had Wagyu beef. I'm sorry. I just confessed this, unburdened myself. And Ryan said, you got to try these Wagyu hamburgers. So I did cook them last night, along with your traditional ones, and I have a report. But following your explanation of what is Kobe beef versus Wagyu beef, and it's still very confusing.
So the Kobe is from Japan and the Wagyu is from the United States.
You can't raise something in the United States and call it Kobe beef.
No, because it's from
Japan. It's from Japan. Yes. Yeah. All right.
But it's the same animal, the same breed.
Yes.
And
yes,
is it treated the same way? Because you hear these, I don't know if they're apocryphal stories about the massaging with beer and doing all that kind of stuff.
Yes. So there is a very strong, strong tradition in Japan for the massaging of the beef and the beer. And it's not a tradition. Tradition is kind of like, you know, Christmas, everybody does it differently. It's almost like a AOC, an appellation the control, like a French, you know, if you want to call it this, you have to raise it by these specs. And there's a person who goes around and makes sure that you're, you know, rubbing it for 6 hours and feeding it for another 12 or, you know, however, and letting it sleep the rest. The genetics have been brought over to the United States. Some of the traditions or AOCs have been brought over to the United States. And that's really where you see the difference, is the maintaining of the traditions. That you see that it goes from something that you would consider to be more or less high prime over prime to something that is, you know, phenomenal and close to the Kobe style.
So it depends on, but there's no rule.
Right. Well, there's no one going around here and inspecting that like they do in Japan. Yeah. They don't have that kind of hold your feet to the fire and make sure that it's being done properly. But that being said, the Wagyu that we have is amazing. All right. The people that we get it from the Gold Coast in Oregon is Pacific Rogue. And we get one beef. They're very, very small producer. And I mean,
Is it important, the bloodline? Because we've had a lot of different producers on the show over the years who tout a specific genetic makeup of their cattle, which they say makes it superior. It's an Angus breed or it's another type of breed with a Wagyu that is supposedly superior. And I don't know.
Yes. So the genetics are very important. It's just like having, an animal that's predisposed to grow a certain way in order to put on fat or hold fat. I mean, some animals might have a heart attack from eating so much, you know, grain or beer before they were able to, you know, get that fat. So it's very important to have those genetics that create a type of animal that can be as marbled.
Okay. And you obviously, I would guess, tested and tasted a lot of different Wagyu producers' beef.
Yeah, I've had a good amount. I've had a good amount, and the marbling is one thing, which is, you know, easy to, it's not easy, but is fairly common. It's the flavor profile of the meat that is within the marbling that really takes it to another place.
You were telling me before we came on the air that, because I've been to Japan and they have all these levels of Kobe beef, the most expensive of which, you look at it and it's all fat. There's very little muscle in there at all. And you made an interesting comment about it, that at the very top, when it's just breathtakingly expensive, that you don't particularly like that because it's kind of greasy.
Yeah, I see the point for sure, and I respect how it's made and how it's produced and how there's ceremony around the top end and how delicious it is. But I find a little bit lower grades to be a little more flavorful, and that's just my personal taste because I kind of like it a little more beefy. If I want to eat butter, I can just, you know, cut a piece of butter off and eat it if I'd like that. And I prefer a little bit more meatiness to it.
Ryan Wren from Sonoma Meat Company, our special guest as we kick off Memorial Day. We're going to get into the intricacies of how to make the ultimate burger on your grill when we come back. Chef John Ash in the KSRO kitchen.
Hello, Sonoma County. I'm Laura Ingram, and I'm here weekdays 9 till noon only on KSRO.
Time to tune up your heating and cooling system for just $49. Did you know that gas inside your heater burns at almost 2,000 degrees and your air conditioner has high voltage electricity running through it? Hi, it's Paul Bigham with 1 Hour Heating and Air. With 26 years in business, I've noticed two ways of thinking. Those that think a system tune-up is simply changing a filter, and those who really don't know it's necessary and put it off. Well, at 1 hour, changing a filter, adjusting gas pressure, and tightening electrical connections are just part of a tune-up. For the procrastinators out there, you end up replacing units twice as often while living with inefficient and sometimes unsafe systems. My tune-up will help keep you safe, utility bills low, and extend the life of your heating and cooling system, all to the tune of only $49. 1 hour heating and air. Call 844-5-TUNE-UP. That's 844-5-TUNE-UP. Or log on to 844-5-TUNE-UP.com.
DJ Sash and Glass has been a proud family-owned and operated company since 1960. Located at 2985 Wilgen Court in Santa Rosa, DJ's is your full-service residential and commercial glass company, supplying one of the largest and most trusted names in windows and doors, Milgard. Milgard windows are custom-made to order and designed to make a statement in any home. DJ's is proud to now feature the Essence Series windows from Milgard. DJ's specializes in heavy custom shower doors, custom and standard shower and tub enclosures, mirrors, skylights, and garden windows, or a simple repair to your screens, fixing a broken window, or cutting a glass piece to any size. DJ's in-house installation crew has you covered from free in-home estimates to the completion of the job. Add a touch of class to your glass with the help of DJ's. 2985 Wilgen Court. Call 546-7344 and online at djsglass.com. DJ Sash and Glass.
It really is the biggest furniture sale of the year. Old Town Furniture and Furniture Depot spectacular Memorial Day weekend sale. Hi, it's Anthony. If you need new furniture, come see us. Old Town Furniture and Furniture Depot have got what you need at 40% off. Save 40% on beautiful bedroom sets, mattresses, sofas, recliners, dining tables, TV consoles, buffets, bookcases, desks. Yes, it's all 40% off. Plus lamps, clocks, pictures, signs. All our unique home accessories are 40% off. Look for special red tags throughout both stores and save up to 60% on one-of-a-kind and discontinued items. And that's not all. Take an additional 5% off your entire purchase if you pay with cash or check, or get 1 year free financing. Don't miss Old Town Furniture and Furniture Depot's spectacular Memorial Day weekend sale, now through Monday at the corner of 4th and Wilson in Santa Rosa's historic Railroad Square.
Sonoma County's News Talk 1350 and the new FM 103.5 KSRO.
We're with The Butcher, Ryan Wynn, co-owner with Janine, his lovely wife of Sonoma Meat Company, celebrating their third anniversary today. We've had Ryan on every year since the company was formed here in Santa Rosa. It's on Sebastopol Avenue. What time is the event today?
It's from 11 to 4, but the shop will be open 10 to 6.
And it's located at what, 34?
35 Sebastopol 35 Avenue.
Sebastopol Avenue in Santa Rosa. We're talking about Wagyu versus traditional beef and the Wagyu burgers that you're selling. Wagyu burgers.
Yes.
Do you have them all the time?
No, we get one Wagyu every 2 to 3 months, so a quarter more or less. Mm. And the Wagyu burgers, like you were talking about, it's a special occasion.
So you say that, but if people really want them, they can reserve it.
So we were talking earlier about if you have a strong desire, we have a list. You call, you say, I'm looking for Wagyu, and this is the cut I'm looking for. I don't know what I want. Mm. What can you recommend? And we can recommend a menagerie of different things. And we'll put your name on the list, and when the beef comes in, we make sure that you
okay,
get that.
Okay, so I have to ask the question.
Okay.
How much more expensive is the Wagyu beef over conventionally?
Oh, over our grass-fed? Yeah. I would say it's about, on average, 15 to 16% more.
So that's not so much.
Huh. It's really important to us, and we've been this way from the beginning, to have something for everybody in our shop and to base our business a little bit on volume, and having inexpensive product for people to eat local meat. It's very important to us.
So I did try the Wagyu.
Okay, I was just going to say, we have to have the consumer report.
Yeah, yes. So I didn't do as you said. Number one, I just want to admit that, because it was just, my wife loves beef tartare. Mm-hmm. She's, and I'm okay with it. So your recommendation to only cook these Wagyu for 25 seconds mm-hmm. on a side, I couldn't do that. But I did 45 seconds.
Okay.
40. So I did about a minute and a half, maybe under 2 minutes for this burger.
Right.
And we served it, and I did think it was really great. My wife went crazy. She thought it was fantastic. And she described it as actually more like a steak mouthfeel than a traditional hamburger feel. It was not greasy. She almost said it was more kind of like a filet mignon experience. And she's has a better palate than I do. Rich flavor, beefy flavor, but it just didn't taste like steer. Mm-mm. I thought that was a really great comment. The texture wasn't crumbly. It was more of a softer texture. Mm-hmm. Anyone that likes steak tartare, she said, would go absolutely mm-hmm. crazy for this particular product. It was interesting. She said, as you're chewing it, there was an interesting textural difference. It tasted more like a cut of steak than a burger.
Mm-hmm. Was it the way it was ground? Was it a coarser grind?
Yeah. So because the Wagyu has so much fat in it, we grind it one time only and very, very slowly. And very, very cold, so that without getting into too much detail, the structure of the meat does not remains whole. It doesn't get mashed. The cell structure does not get broken. What water, which is mostly in the muscle, remains in it, and so that's why you have that kind of juicy steak flavor that's still in it. So that's very, very important when you're making a Wagyu burger. You can't just run it through the grinder really fast, and you have to make sure it's very, very chilled.
Mm. Wow. So you did not season this?
No, we did not.
Mm. And in any of your ground meat, the Wagyu is not seasoned?
Do you know what's interesting? That kind of goes back to that old French technique, mm-hmm. the filet américain, they called it, in which they would take filet and never grind it, but chop it with a knife.
Yes.
For that same reason, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, in Europe, they don't use grinders very often. Mm-hmm. It's very uncommon. Mm-hmm. They use a machine called a buffalo chopper or a bowl cutter, and it uses, it's like a Cuisinart turned on its side in a bowl that spins around, and it chops up the meat that way. I would love it if the American palate could go that direction, but we're not quite there yet.
Okay. And we also tried your traditional burgers, which I really loved quite a lot. It has bacon around
it. The smokehouse burgers are
smoky.
Delicious.
I really did love those.
Anything with bacon, huh? Right. Anything with
bacon. And it's a seasoned burger, though.
Yes. It just has the bacon in it. That's it. It's beef and bacon. No, nothing else.
Oh, yeah. I thought it had spices. The bacon is so flavorful itself. Mm-hmm. I thought it was. I did not season that before putting on the grill. Didn't need any salt or pepper for me. So both of those are available today.
Yes, both. We actually have three burgers to celebrate the 3 years that we've been. And the three burgers today are the Wagyu, which is amazing, and I love so much. My wife doesn't even really cook it. Like I was telling you the other day, she just eats it plain. I bring home three mm-hmm. burgers, and I have two to cook, and I don't know where the third one went. She has eaten it. And then we have our smokehouse burger, which is we have most of the time, and that's the bacon mixed with the grass-fed beef. Mm-hmm. It's delicious. And then we have Williams Ranch lamb burgers, and those are slightly seasoned with salt, pepper, garlic, and a little bit of California chili flakes, just a small amount.
We need to take a break. We'll come back. We need to touch on pork for a bit also.
And also, you have to tell us about your CSA.
Yes.
All that coming back as we celebrate Memorial Day and the beginning season for grilling out.
News, talk, weather, traffic, sports. Sonoma County's News Talk 1350, FM 103.5 and 94.5, KSRO.
And now, here's a health update from the Marin-Sonoma Mosquito and Vector Control District.
In Sonoma and Marin counties, being outdoors hiking, camping, and enjoying the fresh air is what we do. Living in the tall grasses on the hillsides and the fallen leaves along the trails are ticks. Ticks are year-round in Marin and Sonoma counties, so be sure to protect yourself from ticks and tick-borne diseases by applying a repellent containing DEET to exposed skin. Wear light-colored clothing with long sleeves and long pants and check yourself for ticks. Don't forget to check your pets for ticks, too.
The Marin Sonoma Mosquito and Vector Control District is an independent special district committed to protecting public health from mosquitoes and vector-borne disease. All programs and services are funded through benefit assessments and property taxes. Services are provided to all residents in Marin and Sonoma counties at no additional charge.
Learn more about ticks at msmosquito.com.
Hey, this is George Adair with Bay Equity Home Loans. Did you get a second mortgage or home equity line of credit before the mortgage meltdown? If so, you might be in for a big shock because many of these loans have balloon payments or scheduled payment increases after the first 10 years. Now, I don't know about you, but the last thing I want to deal with is a higher house payment or an unexpected balloon payment. To find out if or when your loan payment is going to increase or if you have a balloon payment, call the mortgage experts at Bay Equity Home Loans right now. We specialize in helping people just like you replace equity lines of credit before they become a problem. Call Bay Equity Home Loans at 707-583-8100. Again, that's 583-8100, or go online to bayequityloans.com. With offices in Santa Rosa, Roner Park, and Petaluma, Bay Equity is your home for loans.
Equal housing lender, subject to credit approval, NMLS ID 76988. The transaction will be made pursuant to the Department of Business Oversight, California Finance Lender Law, and or California Residential Mortgage Lending Act.
Come to the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, voted Best Farmers Market. You'll find garden starts at Nature's Spirit Garden, La Vida Buena Nursery, and Ma and Pa Gardens. Savor farm-fresh eggs and produce like fresh strawberries, avocados, Parsons homegrown hothouse tomatoes, and healthy salad greens. Discover quality beef, pork, lamb, rabbit, fresh seafood, and freshly made sausages. The best choices of food vendors. Starting from scratch has returned with their infamous breakfast burrito. Minhee Hill's authentic Korean cuisine. Falafel Fix offers the best falafels. And Chalk Hill Cookery provides yummy plant-based foods. Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market at the Luther Burbank Center for the Arts is open year-round Wednesdays and Saturdays, 8:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. Thanks, Sonoma County, for voting them number one. The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, where it's always fresh, local, and fun.
Sonoma County's most accurate, dependable forecast with KSRO's Daniel Trucios.
Cool today with warmer temps on the way. Sunny skies at 67, 55 on the coast today. A few clouds tonight, low 47, 50 on the shores. Mostly sunny tomorrow, warming up to the mid-70s, high 50s on the coast. Monday, mostly sunny, warmer at 74, 60 on the coastline. Depend on weather every 30 minutes on News Talk 1350 and FM 103.5 KSRO.
Ryan Wren, the butcher from Sonoma Meat Company, joining us on this Memorial Day weekend. Chef John Ash and I in the KSRO kitchen. A few more things we want to cover in the next like 3 or 4 minutes, and that is, John, you want to talk about the purpose of marinating. You have three marinades that you want to talk about. We also want to talk about Mr. Wren's flank steak, so wherever
and
you'd like to go.
One other quick one, which
I want to talk about,
because we had mentioned it a couple of times, and that is the steak tartare and the caution around steak tartare.
Yeah, it's best to get a whole cut and cut it yourself. I think that
and you can do it with a knife.
Can do it with a knife very easily. Yeah. It's quite easy, and it doesn't have to come from the fillet. It can come from a number of different whole muscles, and just cut it really fine like you were mincing garlic and keep it cold in your home and you'll be fine. It's better than buying pre-ground meat. If you want, we can grind whole muscle for you at the shop, but you really can do it yourself, and it's much safer. Our product is great, and if you buy it from another vendor, I still think that that's fine as long as it's a whole muscle.
Okay, that's the important caveat. Purpose of marinating.
Yeah. So talk about that, because people are so confused sometimes.
Yes. So the purpose of marinating is, well, there's two parts to it. There's dry rubs and marinades, and we'll stick with the wet marinades. For a lot of beef, it helps tenderize the outside. Obviously, it adds flavor. If it's seasoned, it starts to draw the moisture out and make it a little bit, you know, more juicy. And then, you know, you can kind of steer whatever, steer, no pun intended, can steer the flavor wherever you would like it to be. So today we have the three types of marinades at the shop, which is the the sweet whiskey and lemon. It's a not sweet lemon. It's a lemon and chili marinade, which we usually do with poultry. And then we have Mr. N's famous flank steak recipe, which is the one I like to talk about.
Yeah. So what's the formula?
So the formula, it's a bit of a secret. So I can tell you some parts of it. It has some chipotle, lime, some cilantro, and a little bit of cumin, and that's all that I can tell you.
And Mr. Wren is not you, Mr. Wren.
No, I am not Mr. Wren. I mean, I am, but it's not the originator of this recipe. That is my father, Patrick Wren. I'd like to thank him for that this recipe that when we opened 3 years ago, I remember him sitting down. We're trying to scrape it together and know what we're going to put in the case. This is going to be a big event. This is the opening of a huge adventure. And he's like, well, what are you going to put in the case for a marinade? And I'm like, I don't know. I'm worried that we have enough beef to sell. And he's like, well, this recipe was given to him by his father, who was in the Navy, and passed down through generations. And we're continuing to sell it. And it's a representation of the Wren kind of legacy in marinade.
What a great story. So here's the question. Mm-hmm. The acid usually shows up in marinades.
Yes.
And the caution is don't leave it in an acid marinade for too long.
No. If you leave it in for too long, it will start to kind of cook a little bit, basically. It changes the color, you know, and we have that in our case. The flank steaks, they tend to be a little bit gray looking, and some people are like, oh, it's not red, or, you know, don't worry, put it on the grill. Once you put it in your mouth, we'll see you the next weekend, because it's fantastically delicious. All my friends, oh, are you cooking Mr. Wren's flank steak? All right, we'll be over. No,
but it is that thing you sometimes see in recipes. Yeah. You say, well, marinate it overnight.
You want to be kind of careful with that, because it will cook it and coat it. You put protein, it's like you put an egg white in a bowl of you know, lemon juice, it starts to coagulate. It starts to harden those proteins. And that's what's going to happen with the meat, because meat is a majority.
How do you cook flank steak?
Usually we do about 3.5 minutes per side for medium rare to medium rare. And then you can go up if you want in terms of, you know, if you cook it longer, then it's going to be
more.
So
it's quick.
It's quick, yeah. Right? High heat. You can go direct heat with this, with the flank steak recipe.
And you
don't overcook it.
I prefer if you don't. Yeah. You know, some people like it well done. I wouldn't recommend that, but you can. And it's very important when you're cutting the flank steak that, after you've cooked it, you cut across the grain. You don't want to cut with the grain, and it's quite simple to look at it. Mm-hmm. If you come to the shop, anybody behind the counter will explain to you what direction the grain is and be happy to give you
Because if you cut it with the grain, you're going to be chewing on it next week.
Yes, it definitely has a lot of, you'll spend some time on it.
Well said.
Yes.
We got about a minute or two. Who provides your pork? Who's providing this whole pig you're going to do today?
So the whole pig that we have today comes from Stone Valley. They're our pork producer. It's finished on walnuts, raised in the most humane and amazing way that I've ever seen. I potentially would consider coming back as a pig on their farm, because it seemed really nice. In deep bedding under shade structures, which is really, really lovely. The quality, we've been working with them for the past, over a year and a half now, and every time that we get a batch of pigs, the quality is better. So I don't know how they're going to continue on this path, but it's quite amazing. They're doing a wonderful job.
So there's a lot of discussion about heritage breeds. What does that mean?
Heritage breeds. So heritage breeds has to do with they're not crossbred. They're direct heritage originally from Europe or Poland or China. Purebred. So a lot of places do a heritage cross in order to get vigor. So if you crossbreed, the animal grows faster, and it tends to be you get, you know, the good healthy traits from both genetic streams. Ours are heritage cross, so they take two heritage breeds and we cross them together. So it's
got it.
Tamworth and I think they're Redwattles.
We are out of time. I'm sorry. We've got to say goodbye. Thank you for coming today. Mm-hmm. Thanks for these. What are these?
These are fantastic.
They're the salami-style snack sticks that we have only at the retail shop.
Oh, man. Mm-hmm. I want a dozen of these for Father's Day, if anyone's listening. Awesome. Thank you, Ryan. We'll probably be by a little bit later. The public's invited, right,
yes,
for this open
come
house?
Come on down and come celebrate with us.
The Salami Company, Ryan Rinn, celebrating their third anniversary. Great seeing you. Mm-hmm. Thanks for coming in and educating us on meat.
Thank you so much
We'll be back.
Me.
We're going to talk truffles, John.
Oh,
guess
that's
what?
Right.
There's some truffles that have finally been harvested.
Really?
After many, many years of trying. We've got the guy on the line that
in California
helped bring them to Sonoma County and dined on them just a few weeks ago. That coming up next.
Come to the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, voted best farmers market. You'll find garden starts at Nature's Spirit Garden, La Vida Buena Nursery, and Ma and Pa Gardens. Savor farm-fresh eggs and produce like fresh strawberries, avocados, Parsons homegrown hothouse tomatoes, and healthy salad greens. Discover quality beef, pork, lamb, rabbit, fresh seafood, and freshly made sausages. The best choices of food vendors. Starting from Scratch has returned with their infamous breakfast burrito. Minhee Hill's authentic Korean cuisine. Falafel Fix offers the best falafels. And Chalk Hill Cookery provides yummy plant-based foods. Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market at the Luther Burbank Center for the Arts is open year-round Wednesdays and Saturdays, 8:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. Thanks, Sonoma County, for voting them number one. The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, where it's always fresh, local, and fun.
Downtown is now unified with the completion of Courthouse Square. Whether you're on the east end or west end of downtown, there's always something to discover.
Hi, this is Bill from Marketplace on 4th. Come browse our gift shop for unique home decor, gourmet sweets, and savories. We search for special home and garden accents. Fun gifts for kids of all ages. 845 4th Street, next to Fremont Park. Look for Bozo out front.
Hi, this is Dee from Whistle Stop Antiques. We've been a Railroad Square institution over 42 years. We have 36 vendors and 10,000 square feet of furniture, collectibles, books, model trains to gorgeous jewelry here on the corner of 4th and Davis. We look forward to seeing you soon.
Park in our many garages, meters, or parking lots and explore downtown, the heartbeat of Santa Rosa. See more and learn more at srcity.org/downtown.
Sonoma County's News Talk 1350 and the new FM 103.5 KSRO.
It's the KSRO Good Food Hour with me, Steve Garner, along with Chef John Ash. So we have been talking about truffles for many, many years here in Sonoma County. Is it viable? Could it ever happen? And before we introduce our guest, do you know, well, you weren't here, I don't think, in the mid-70s in Sonoma County.
I was.
Were you?
Yeah.
Do you remember that Henry Trione started talking about raising truffles 40 years ago?
He actually staged a truffle festival and all of that stuff. I remember going to that. And there was a Frenchman, whose name now escapes me, who did two things. He grew snails and packaged them here in Sonoma County. And he also seeded a lot of the forests around Sonoma County with truffle spores. And I'm not sure if they ever worked, but...
Well, this was back, as you recall, so we're both old enough to remember all this, back in the mid-1970s, and Henry Trione did the first California Truffle Congress, is what he called it. Do you remember that? And it was actually in downtown at the old, at the City Hall. And then they had a dinner at Los Robles Lodge in the 70s. So he talked about this, and then he bought a couple, he imported a couple dogs from Italy. Do you remember this? And it was like Trione's folly.
Yeah.
I mean, people were like, oh, you know, Henry Trione. and blah, blah. Yeah. So here's 45 years ago. And then in about 2003, we remember we had Jill Hunting on the show, the Truffle Secrets newsletter. Remember at the Mushroom and Truffle Festival that we were at 13, 14 years ago? And she started talking about there's going to be a whole group of people that are going to start planning these. And then in 2011, Chef Justin Wangler from Kendall Jackson was on the show in like May of 2011 saying, we've just planted, I don't know, 30, 40,000, I don't remember, how many it was, trees, and check back with me, Steve and John, in 5 or 6 or 7 years.
Yeah.
So, having said all that, we have Brian Malone on the KSR line this morning, who was, I believe, instrumental in planting those oak and trees back in 2011. Good morning, Brian.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Hi. How you doing? So were you there planting all these trees back in 2011 or so?
I was. I've been working here since 2007. And in 2009, the idea was presented. And so we started planning, you know, and selecting the perfect site for this orchard. And ended up finding a place in Bennett Valley, of all places. Mm-hmm. And planted it in 2011, and it took a while, quite a few years, to come to fruition. But it was so exciting.
So can you tell us how do you plant a truffle? It's symbiotic, isn't it, with the tree? Isn't that how it works?
It sure is. So you know, you purchase some seedlings that are inoculated with the truffle fungus, or the ectomycorrhizae fungi, and then you have to prep your site, so you're going to put that specific fungi into its optimum environment. And then, you know, there's management strategies over the years to just really get that the mycelial growth and the fungi just to thrive in that particular environment. And it did.
So you plant first, you have to plant the hazelnut trees and the oak trees because they're kind of the host where the truffle fungus is inoculated into the trees. Is that correct?
That's correct. It has a symbiotic relationship with the trees. So you're getting the trees that are inoculated already with tuber melanosporum, which is the black paragord truffle spores. And then you plant those trees that are inoculated into the soil, and then you just have to grow them up carefully. And, this last February, you know, we pulled 17 truffles out of the ground.
Wow.
It was amazing.
How big were the truffles? Were they good size?
I'd say probably the smallest one was the size of a quarter, and the biggest one was the size of a tennis ball.
Wow.
That's good size.
Yeah.
It was
pretty amazing.
how many trees did you plant back in 2011?
So we have 9.6 acres out there, so there's a little under 4,000 trees on that particular site.
So now will more and more be produced each year, or you can't, or can you predict that?
It's, you know, in theory, yes. The first year is typically a smaller harvest. And in the research I've done, each year after that, you know, you have incremental growth. We're hoping for the best, you know, and I think it'll just keep, as the root systems keep getting bigger and bigger, the chances for just more and more truffle production are definitely there.
So what did you do with the ones you harvested?
I put them in a bag and passed them along to the owner.
And what did they do with them?
I believe they cooked them up, you know, that evening.
Well, Justin said he made a risotto. He said he made a risotto, and then
he did. I forgot about that. We went over to the office, and he was up there whipping up some risotto and shaving the truffles over the top of that.
That's what he did.
Good stuff.
When I talked to him, and I said, "Well, what did you do?" He said, "I didn't do anything." He said, "I just made risotto and shaved those truffles." Top, and he said they were extraordinary. The perfume and the flavor was just incomparable.
Yeah, and when we were harvesting them, you could actually just stick your nose down to the ground, and the aromatics coming off the ground were just so intense.
So did you use a dog or a pig or something to help you harvest
them? We did.
Did you?
Yeah, we had a couple different dogs come out. One dog was from Oregon, the Umami Truffle dog, and the other dog we used was from another orchard manager up in Alexander Valley, Alexander Valley Truffle Company. They had a dog. So we brought both those dogs out and were successful with both of those dogs.
Did you expect to be successful? Did you have a sense that, oh, we think this is the year and you let the dogs loose?
We've been trying with dogs the past couple years without success, but most of the literature says that you're going to get truffle production in between year 5 and year 8, and we're at year 6. So it's right on the money for what's been theoretically put out there.
Wow. What, do you have any idea what the retail cost of those truffles would be on the open market?
I would say since they were the first ever Sonoma County grown truffles, they're priceless.
Yeah. Wow. It's really exciting.
But black Perigord truffles are worth hundreds of dollars a pound. Yeah.
Yeah, I think on the open market, it depends if it's in peak season or not, but you know, they'll fetch anywhere from $600 to $1,000 a pound, based on supply.
It's very, very exciting news. So this is the first ever really commercially grown Sonoma County truffle, correct?
That is correct.
Wow.
Yeah. It's just great to be a part of one of Jess Jackson's, his vision of having this established out in Sonoma County and having local truffles grown. It's just amazing.
So can you tell us where this orchard is? No, I'm teasing. I'm teasing.
It's in Bennett Valley.
It's in the Bennett Valley area.
So just drive around. You'll stumble on it. Yeah. Well, thank you, Brian. This is an incredible wait here, gestation period, about 7-8 years ago to finally bring this to fruition. It's very exciting.
Well, it's interesting that other people have tried, but I guess we know more about how truffles grow and a better chance for success.
Yeah, I know there's a lot of orchards in Sonoma County that are on kind of the cusp of the producing year, so it should be an exciting next couple of years.
Well, this is great. Did you take photos of the harvest?
Oh yeah, yeah. I have it all documented. It's amazing. Yeah, I had to document that experience. I mean, we were so excited. It was just unreal.
Is there someplace we can go to see them? See your photos? Do you have it up on a website?
If you guys just want to send me a request via email, you guys have my contact info. I would be more than happy to share that info.
Can we share a photo, or will you have permission to share the photos with our listeners? We wouldn't give the location, but is that okay? Or do you know?
I don't see why not.
Okay. Because I think it'd be exciting just to see what they look like, and they're coming from Sonoma County.
And hopefully you have a picture of the dogs, too.
We'll stay in contact, and we'll make this available to our listeners. And thank you for sharing this exciting news with us on the Good Food Hour today, Brian.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Our pleasure. We'll talk again soon for the next harvest.
That's right.
Next,
and congratulations.
February, March of 2018.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
And maybe Brian will invite us to that dinner.
Yeah.
Thanks again for your time.
All right. Have a good one.
Take care.